Macintosh Folklore Radio, written by Andy Hertzfeld and Company, and read by Derek Warren. A Brief History of Claris Works, as seen by Bob Hearn, written in January 2004. This is my little tale of adventure in Silicon Valley. Claris Works was one of the most popular Macintosh programs of all time, and at one point had over 20 million active users. Despite ClarisWorks taking on the name AppleWorks after Steve Jobs returned to Apple in 1997, this history has no relation to the text-based product called AppleWorks for the Apple II. Section 1. Prehistory. It all started with a little software company in Houston called Styleware, run by Kevin Harvey. Styleware made Apple II software, including titles like Multiscribe. In 1986, Apple introduced what looked to be an interesting new computer, the Apple IIgs, an Apple II that acted like a Mac. Styleware hired a bunch of computer science students from Rice University to write software for this new machine. Among them were myself, Jeff Erickson, Scott Holdaway, Scott Lindsay, Tom Hoke, Mike Hibbets, and Sid Polk. This was a natural job for me. I had been an Apple enthusiast and programmer since 1977 when I got my first Apple II. Jeff and I wrote TopDraw, which was similar to MacDraw. Originally to be called ColorDraw, TopDraw was the first color object-oriented drawing program for a Macintosh-style graphical user interface. The Mac II had not yet arrived. Macs were black and white. Our main programming effort at Styleware became an integrated application for the 2GS, to be called GSWorks. It would contain word processing, graphics, spreadsheet, and other capabilities. This turned out to be a very difficult undertaking. The 2GS was not really powerful enough to support its color graphical user interface, and GSWorks was a very large and complicated program. The Macintosh was an 8 MHz machine with a 1-bit black and white display. The 2GS was a 2.8 MHz machine with a 2 or 4-bit color display. Furthermore, at that time, application software for the 2GS had to be written in assembly language, adding to the complexity of the task. Section 2. Claris, Part 1. Meanwhile, Apple had formed a software subsidiary named Claris to develop and market application software. Initially, Claris sold MacWrite, MacPaint, and MacDraw for the Macintosh, and AppleWorks for the Apple II. The original plan was that Claris would become completely independent from Apple someday and go public, but that never happened. Naturally, Claris was interested in this forthcoming AppleWorks-like program for the 2GS. In 1988, Claris bought Styleware, moved the development team to its offices in Santa Clara, and rechristened GSWorks as AppleWorks GS. By this time, I was already living in the San Francisco Bay Area. I'd moved out in 1987 to be with my fiancée, Liz Harding, who was in grad school at Berkeley. By late 1988, AppleWorks GS was ready to ship. More to the point, ready or not, it was shipped. The plan had been to reorganize the Styleware team around a project to write an integrated application for the Macintosh. This would compete against Microsoft Works, a daunting prospect even in 1988. Apparently, Claris decided it was too daunting. After we finished AppleWorks GS, the plan was changed and the Styleware programmers were distributed throughout the other Mac projects at the company. Scott Holdaway wound up on the MacWrite 2 team, and I was placed on the team responsible for MacDraw 2. Despite the change of plans, Claris was still a great place to be. It had inherited some Apple culture, and there was a strong sense that we were creating the best, cleanest software out there. Years later, I realized that this feeling had led to a certain blindness to the pace at which the rest of the industry was moving. In its effort to produce slick, bug-free software, Claris ignored the hard reality that having a sheer number of features sells, independent of elegance of design. Some products, such as MacWrite Pro, were so greatly delayed by stringent quality assurance requirements that they lost their effectiveness in the market. Around April of 1989, Scott Holdaway and I decided that our jobs were not what we had had in mind when we joined Claris. We wanted to write new software, not maintain old software. So we left Claris to form our own company, Spartacus Software, which would create an integrated package for the Mac. Almost everyone at Claris told us we were crazy. How could two programmers on their own compete against Microsoft? The one exception was Yogan Dalal, VP of Engineering at Claris. He thought we had a good chance. Claris gave us some equipment in return for the right of first refusal if we wound up selling our company. This turned out to be a great deal for Claris. Spartacus' seed capital amounted to about $10,000. I remember picking up our computers from the Apple store like it was yesterday. It was incredibly exciting. The two of us were about to take on Microsoft, and we knew we could do it. Section 3. On Our Own. Scott and I had made a little money from the Stileware sale, and my, by then, wife Liz had a job as a geologist, so we could last for a while on our own. For the first couple of months, we had our computers, 16 MHz Macintosh 2Xs, set up on card tables in the dining room of Scott's apartment. This is where ClarisWorks was born. We eventually wanted the program to be sold as MacWorks, but early versions were called BSWorks for Bob and Scott. We rented a house together in Santa Clara to save money, and it turned into Spartacus headquarters. Things went well for the first several months, and we settled on a very nice overall architecture for the program. All integrated software to date had effectively been several separate programs, loosely stitched together. For several reasons, we had to do better than that. Our first reason was our desire to do something new and interesting. Second, two programmers cannot write a competitive standalone word processor, spreadsheet, graphics, and database program in the space of about a year. Third, application size was a big deal in those days. Microsoft Works was a big program. We wanted to do better. We came up with a frame-based approach. Most of the functionality, particular to the various application types, was packaged up into frames: word processing frames, graphics frames, and so on. These frames were then used as building blocks to make documents in a unified programming framework. For example, a word processing document was essentially a bunch of text frames, one per page, linked together. Doing this neatly was a big challenge. Many subsequent efforts at building a component-based architecture like Apple's OpenDoc have failed to take into account the top-level user interface. In the end, not only was most of the code shared across different types of documents, but the application was also truly integrated. The frames could be embedded within one another, so you could plop a spreadsheet frame right into a word processing document. Text objects within a graphics document had a full-featured word processing engine behind them. The database form editor used the built-in graphics environment, and so on. One cool related thing was our shared graphical context mechanism. Sometimes, objects wound up being displayed in multiple frames at the same time, like a large graphic stretched to the point of spanning more than one page. We developed a general architecture for displaying actions live in multiple contexts. Of course, a lot of these ideas are old hat today, but they were new and exciting in 1989. Some creative programming was required to accomplish these things efficiently on the common hardware of that era. There were some cool features that didn't make it into the shipping product. For example, spreadsheet formulas were originally much more powerful. You could relate things like graphical object positions and document properties to spreadsheet cells. This way, you could have the result of a calculation move objects around graphically or vice versa. Further work in this direction led to a novel constraint-based programming paradigm called Moose, which I may resurrect someday. Our work was interrupted in October by the Loma Prieta earthquake. This was the magnitude 7.1 quake that interrupted the World Series. Having lived in the Bay Area for a few years, I'd been through several quakes, but nothing had prepared me for this one. I was sure the house was going to collapse, but of course, it didn't. By November, we had made great progress. All the document types were more or less functional. Scott had done most of the word processing code while I had finished the graphics and most of the framework, along with everything else that we'd both had a hand in. There was a lot of work left to be done, but we figured it was time to start shopping the program around. We didn't want to be unemployed forever. All along, Scott and I wanted to take the program back to Claris and finish it with our friends from Stileware. We gave the Claris executives a demo, and they were impressed. Around that time, Claris decided that it really did make sense to be in the Mac integrated software market after all. Their plan was to buy either us or a competing effort called SmartWorks. Claris preferred our program, but when it came time to talk numbers, things didn't work out. Claris said, "We'll give you X." We had had in mind something closer to 6X. Maybe we were greedy. X wasn't bad for less than a year of work. But we had written it, it was ours, and we thought it was worth a lot more. Of course, Claris had first rights of refusal, meaning they had the right to match any other offer, so they had nothing to lose by letting us shop it elsewhere. The following is a letter we sent to Steve Jobs at Next in January 1990. From Spartacus Software of Santa Clara, California. To Stephen Jobs, President, Next Incorporated, Redwood City, California. Dear Mr. Jobs, we are offering for sale an integrated package for the Macintosh. The program integrates word processing, spreadsheet, database, and graphics. The primary markets for this software are education and first-time buyers. The upcoming low-cost Mac is a major consideration. Obviously, Next is not in the business of marketing Macintosh software. The result we have in mind is similar to what happened with Right Now. The distribution rights could be licensed to TeaMaker, while the code is ported to the Next machine. The proposal we are offering is the acquisition of our code and our development team for a sum and/or royalties to be negotiated. The program is now approximately 4 months away from alpha. In comparison to Microsoft Works, our program is cleaner, simpler, more powerful, more integrated, and requires less disk space and memory. If you wish to see a demonstration, please call or write us at the above address. We will provide you with a non-disclosure agreement before the demo. Please consider this letter strictly confidential. Sincerely, Robert A. Hearn, Senior Partner. We were a little unclear on the relationship between TeaMaker, Right Now, and Next. We did finally receive a call from Next about a year later, long after we had sold the program to Claris. Ironically, Steve Jobs ultimately wound up owning ClarisWorks anyway. After he returned to Apple, he brought ClarisWorks from Claris to Apple and renamed it AppleWorks. We tried. However, there are things called proper channels, and we didn't have them. We also sent letters to Aldous, to Ashton Tate, and others. Offering the program to Microsoft is something we would never have done. Without exception, nobody returned our letters or our repeated calls. We had a great program and we knew it, but we had no way to get it out into the world. We didn't have the resources to produce and market it ourselves. We were a bit clueless. There were, no doubt, plenty of venture capital opportunities and agents available who did have the connections to get us in the door at the big software companies, but this was before the time of SiliconValley.com culture. We eventually found what we needed, but for a tense few months, the future looked bleak. The winds had changed again at Claris, and they were no longer sure they wanted an integrated application. Nerves frayed. Somehow we managed to keep the effort going and didn't tear each other's throats out. One day, we got a call from Kyle Mashima, who had been a marketing executive at Claris when we worked there. He knew about us and had left Claris to join a venture capital firm. He arranged a demo of ClarisWorks for Guy Kawasaki, former Apple evangelist and ex-president of Aceus. Guy watched the demo at our place and loved it. He said, "Why don't you guys move into my office in Palo Alto? I'll move into my wife's office across the hall." This was way too cool. Everybody knew who Guy Kawasaki was. We had read in the San Jose Mercury News a couple of months earlier that he had left Aceus and there was rampant speculation about where he would go next. We previously joked that we should hire him as the president of Spartacus. Now, that was a distinct possibility. But there were other options to consider. In the meantime, Kyle had agreed to act as our agent in offering ClarisWorks to other companies. The next couple of months were a whirlwind of demos and development crunch time. We did indeed move into Guy's office rent-free, and he literally moved out across the hall, leaving his Porsche posters on the wall to keep us motivated. At the same time we were looking for buyers, we were scoping out the possible structures for our own company, which would produce and market ClarisWorks, with Guy as president and Kyle as VP of marketing. This was an exciting time, a complete turnaround from the depths of despair we had endured a short while ago. We were living every Macintosh hacker's dream. It would have been a great adventure to start the company with Guy and Kyle, but in the end, competitive offers made Claris sit up and take notice. Claris wound up offering us everything we wanted and more. We couldn't refuse. This was our chance to rejoin the Stylewear crew and have the Claris stamp of quality on our work. Guy and Kyle weren't left out in the cold either. They received an agent's fee. Guy now runs Garage Technology Ventures, and Kyle is now VP of Strategic Development at Adobe. I'll always wonder how it would have turned out had we taken the other course. In July 1990, we sold our program to Claris. Section 4. Claris, Part 2. Pink Floyd's Money was playing on the radio as we drove to the Claris campus on the Friday that we signed a letter of intent with Claris. The following Monday, we were back at work. Since we had left, Claris had moved into spiffy new corporate headquarters, known as The Wedge because of its shape. I suppose when you get right down to it, The Wedge was Dilbert land on the inside, but it still seemed pretty cool to us. After all, it had an atrium. Things were great, but there were still a few speed bumps before we could ship. Claris never went public, and right after Claris bought Spartacus, Apple decided to keep Claris as a permanent subsidiary. This was not in line with the expectations of the executive staff at Claris. Shortly after we arrived, Claris president resigned. Over the next year, most of the executive staff also left. The general turmoil complicated everything within the company. We were joined by Stylewear programmers Tom Hoke and Scott Lindsay in our effort to finish the product, now codenamed Terminator because that's what we were intending to do to Microsoft Works. Mate Gross, who had been a tester for AppleWorks GS, headed up the Terminator test team. On the marketing side, Bob Lisbon joined as product manager. Claris Works would not have become the product it did without the hard work of these and many other talented people at Claris. At this point in time, the final product name was yet to be decided. In line with MacWrite and MacDraw, we wanted our program to be called MacWorks, but that name belonged to the Macintosh emulation environment for the Apple Lisa, the ancestor of the Mac. Claris also wanted to avoid the Mac prefixes as Windows versions of our products became a possibility. For a while, Fireworks was the leading candidate, but that name was owned by someone who wrote Fire Station Management software, and he was unwilling to part with the name. Revolution was also considered, but in the end, Claris Works was chosen, more by default than anything else. After the sale of our program to Claris, it took another year and a half to finish it. Some of this was due to the new features, some to Claris' stringent quality assurance, and some of the delay was simply misestimation of the amount of work required. Suffice it to say that we worked long and hard. Towards the end of this period, it became critical that we shipped the product. We weren't the only ones trying to shoot down Microsoft Works. Our competition included SmartWorks, the program Claris didn't buy, and BeagleWorks. SmartWorks had been relabeled GreatWorks and acquired by Symantec, who had also been very interested in Spartacus. BeagleWorks was another integrated product, produced by Beagle Brothers. All three products were due around the same time, with the intention of riding the wave of Apple's new lower-cost Macintosh Classic LC and 2SI. These machines were also targeted at education, a big part of our target market. The lower-cost Macs shipped in configurations with only a megabyte of RAM, so achieving acceptable performance on these models was a major technical requirement for the project. Finally, Claris Works 1.0 was certified Golden Master in October of 1991 and began shipping to the public. Initial reviews were positive, and sales began to take off. Liz and I celebrated with a trip to Hawaii, where I was thrilled to see Claris Works on the shelves in the computer stores. Claris Works quickly surpassed Microsoft Works in both sales and popularity. Early in 1992, Microsoft shipped a new version of Microsoft Works with the claim, "Best-selling integrated application for the Macintosh," on the box. Claris Legal forced them to remove this inaccurate text. In response, Microsoft objected that Claris sales numbers were based on copies of Claris Works bundled with Macintoshes, but in fact, retail sales were also better than Microsoft's. For once, Microsoft had been beaten in the software marketplace in a category in which it had been dominant. By this time, development of Claris Works 2.0 was already well underway. Section 5. Oregon. After ClarisWorks 1.0 shipped, Liz and I moved to Portland, Oregon. She had grown up near the city, and each time we visited her family there, we loved it so much that it became harder to leave after each visit. We also wanted a break from the crowds and high prices of Silicon Valley. We had a dream that Claris would relocate the entire development team to Portland. The other team members were amenable, but I was under no illusions that Claris would see fit to open an office in Portland. However, when it came time to negotiate terms of the contract for ClarisWorks 2.0, Scott put his foot down. No Portland office, no contract. Claris gave in. In the end, we had to settle for Vancouver, Washington, which is just across the Columbia River from Portland. Liz and I bought a house there, the whole development crew moved to Vancouver, and ClarisWorks 2.0 started to take shape. In due course, we finished ClarisWorks 2.0. Sales were strong, and ClarisWorks was winning lots of awards. At least according to one Claris marketing presentation I saw, ClarisWorks was outselling Microsoft Office, though presumably by units and not revenue. For a couple of years, ClarisWorks was a $100 million product. Now it was time to think about version 3, but by this time the downside of moving to Portland was becoming apparent. Claris management had continued to turn over, and Scott and I no longer had any close ties with the latest management team. By becoming more isolated, we had freed ourselves from a lot of the daily hassles we'd had in Santa Clara. This let us focus on programming, but losing contact was too high a price to pay, both for the development team as a whole and at a personal level for Scott and I. We had a hard time negotiating the contract for ClarisWorks 3, and development was not particularly smooth. Claris needed a new version on the market before all the features were ready, and they shipped a version with a small number of feature upgrades as 3.0, against Scott's wishes as well as mine. The feature set we had agreed to eventually shipped as ClarisWorks 4. By the time ClarisWorks 4 shipped, Claris' vision of the future of the product was too different from mine for me to continue working on it. One of Claris' requirements was integration with OpenDoc, which necessitated a massive restructuring of the program. OpenDoc was designed to tackle a lot of the same problems that ClarisWorks already covered. Each project had its own ideas and metaphors for component integration and interface, and the two directions were not particularly complementary. I left after ClarisWorks 4 to pursue other interests, while Scott and the rest of the development team stayed on. Before ClarisWorks 5 was finished, the rift between Claris and the remaining development team had become too wide. Scott Holdaway, Tom Hoke, Scott Lindsay, Bruce Hammond, and Carl Grice left Claris to form what would later become Gobi Software. These were the core engineers, the ones who had been with the project the longest. Several newer engineers remained. Three in particular were responsible for OpenDoc integration. At Apple's Worldwide Developers Conference in 1996, they demoed a version of ClarisWorks with OpenDoc support. Apple was particularly eager to demonstrate to developers that a flagship product was supporting the new component technology, ergo, everyone else should, too. Not surprisingly, not to me anyways, the following week, the three engineers were recruited by Microsoft. Result? No OpenDoc support in ClarisWorks 5.0. That maneuver is just one typical example of the way Microsoft stifles competition. Ironically, in this case, it hit a product conceived in defiance of the Microsoft way. Section 6. Whither ClarisWorks? In January 1998, Claris Corporation ceased to exist. ClarisWorks was brought directly into Apple and renamed AppleWorks. What had been Claris became FileMaker Incorporated. In March of 2000, Apple released AppleWorks 6.0. This was widely perceived as a very minor update that brought about several problems, like the removal of a handful of file translators. Meanwhile, the guys at Gobi Software, whom I had since joined, were working on Gobi Productive. This product was the next logical step beyond ClarisWorks, with a more open architecture written for the BOS. When Gobi was founded in late 1996, there was widespread speculation that Apple would buy B and that BOS would become the basis of the next Macintosh operating system. Thus, Gobi would have a leg up on development for the new platform. However, Apple surprised everyone by buying Next instead of B. Next Step became the basis for macOS 10. And the writing was on the wall for B, although most of us refused to read it. BOS did not survive in the marketplace, thus neither did Gobi. Over the past few years, there have been rumors and speculation that Apple was working with or reacquired Gobi or the original ClarisWorks team to produce a new Mac version of AppleWorks based on Gobi Productive. Apple and Gobi did indeed hold discussions over the course of Gobi's history, however, I am not at liberty to go into details. In the end, Apple did not acquire Gobi, but three of its founders, Scott Holdaway, Scott Lindsay, and Carl Grice, did rejoin Apple as employees when Gobi failed. They won't tell me what they're up to, even off the record, but whatever it is, it does not involve the Gobi Productive codebase. Nor, I am reasonably sure, does it involve the ClarisWorks code. As for myself, I went back to graduate school to study artificial intelligence at the MIT Artificial Intelligence Lab. Ironically, although I dragged the team to Oregon and I was always the most diehard Apple enthusiast of the bunch, I'm now the one who has left both Oregon and Apple. I miss them both. I'm depressed at the lack of progress AppleWorks has made over the past few years, though I still use it on a daily basis. I wish I had found a way to keep it moving forward. I also wish there were an alternative that encompassed the simplicity and tight integration that we spent so much effort crafting into ClarisWorks. I can think of nothing I would rather do than help create a modern version of ClarisWorks, except finish my thesis. Here's hoping others can carry the torch forward. Author's note: those who are excessively nosy or observant might have noticed that the four-letter file creator code for ClarisWorks is BOBO. Why BOBO? This is related to TopDraw. When Jeff and I sat down to spec out TopDraw, we played around a lot with MacDraw. One excessively silly creation, aided by my wife, Liz, was entitled My Dog Bobo. Alas, Bobo has been lost in the depths of time, but he lives on in every ClarisWorks file.